Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Radio Renaissance. I'm Jared Taylor with American Renaissance. With me is my indispensable co-host, Paul Kersey, and today is June 22nd, year of our Lord, 2022. The year is more than halfway over. Astonishing the way time flies when you're having fun, as Mr. Kersey and I invariably do on these podcasts. Let us begin with a comment. A listener writes in to say, in your previous podcast, you mentioned the concern the left has for increasing the number of black doctors and pilots. I would like to offer a suggestion. It's been reported that Oregon Governor Kate Brown signed a law that allows students to graduate without proficiency in reading, writing, and math. I propose that the American Medical Association and the Federal Aviation Administration adopt a similar policy in which black students are given the proficiency appropriate credentials, declaring that they are certified both to fly and to be doctors. Once the melanin enhanced are credentialed, they should be assigned as personal physicians and private pilots for the world's elite. In this way, our unelected masters can lead by example. Well, sounds good to me. I suppose this is a version of you broke it, you bought it. I recall another listener once suggested that a college diploma be stapled to every birth certificate of a black baby. And you know, people have really lost their minds when they start calling for affirmative action for doctors and airline pilots. I think they must really believe it. They really must believe the differences are just all a matter of white wickedness, and remove that and they'll be just as competent and just as skillful as anybody else. But
you know, it's funny. I want to go back and say something about their pets and how they should be forced to. I think they'd be fine with that. I think they believe so much of this. It is about punishing. It is about punishing whites and promoting. But we might talk about a story about blacks in one profession who feel left out as surgeons. But the point is, I think they'd be fine with that.
I don't think so.
You don't think so?
No finer than they are, living diverse lives themselves. How many of our leaders and rulers and talking heads and people who kick us around for our own good actually believe and live a diverse lifestyle? What do their neighbors look like? Where do they send their children to school? No, they wouldn't sit still for it for a moment. No.
It would be a fun question to pose to them, though.
It would be. It would be. And if you ever got a hold of one and got an answer out of her. Now, this year was the first time we celebrated Juneteenth full tilt as a national holiday. And there was a story out of our nation's capital, Washington, D.C., in which it was the Daily Mail. One of its subheads said, girls twerking atop vehicles flee when gunfire begins. It was one of those.
It's a good video to track down.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Boy, did they flee and boy, did they twerk. But the twerking came before the fleeing. Well, because there's probably some twerking afterwards, too. But in any case, gunfire broke out, as it just somehow does. Shots rang out. It was one of those natural phenomena, like Old Faithful geysering, you know, no human intervention at all. But a 15-year-old boy was shot dead, poor lad. He was found to have had a gun on him. Also, he had been shot twice before, once earlier this year. People grow up fast in these fast times in Washington, D.C. A policeman was one among the four people injured. No arrests so far. So there must have been about 1,000 witnesses, or at least 1,000 people heard it, but no one's probably cooperating with the police. Now, other headlines over the Juneteenth weekend. Grand Rapids PD, one shot near Juneteenth Festival. From Front Page Magazine, on Juneteenth, bullets fly from Obama Boulevard, that's in Los Angeles, to John Lewis Way. That's in Nashville. Probably not all the way. That would be quite
a shot. That's a heck of a shot if you can get it from L.A. to, what was it, Nashville, you said?
Yes, yes. That would be a heck of a shot. Not even a 50 cal go that far. And also, man 21 is killed and 8 more people are injured in a shooting on Juneteenth barbecue gathering in Harlem.
What? You also left out that it was a Juneteenth Father's Day event in Harlem.
Yes.
That mass shooting. And that actually is the definition. The one in D.C. and the one in Harlem were both black mass shootings.
Yes, they were. Then in North Carolina, Juneteenth Festival shut down following an unrelated drive-by shooting. Well, it happened to take place in the parking lot where the festival was taking place. And the police, they said they had to make a very tough call. They decided to shut the thing down just in case somebody got hurt. And then there was a black website that really laid it on the line. It said, Juneteenth, : new holiday for blacks killing other blacks. Okay. Alas, all too true.
If you recall, get a quick headline for you. No arrests nearly 2 years since deadly Juneteenth block party shooting in Charlotte.
Yes.
Reward has increased to 30. I'm sorry. The reward has increased to $47,000 by the FBI. No one stepping forward to make sure that these Black Lives Matter. During that shooting, Mr. Taylor, 181 rounds were fired during a block party on Juneteenth.
Yep.
It was a Juneteenth celebration
left
4 people dead. 9 people were shot total. And no one stepping forward. And remember, that was during the summer of George Floyd. Black lives don't seem to matter in this case, even when there's $47,000 on the line.
That's a lot of money. That's a lot of money. You'd think that would bring them out, those witnesses, but I guess not. Meanwhile, in New York City, this last Juneteenth, Mayor Eric Adams, our African-American mayor of New York City, gave his first Juneteenth address. Do you know what his theme was?
Blacks.
What an idea. He said the city needs to do better, preserving historically black neighborhoods. What's it ever done for historically white neighborhoods, I wonder? Well, I guess they don't care.
Those need to be replaced.
No, they need to be replaced.
Well, and renamed.
The 61-year-old Democrat said that forcing out black residents, forcing them out, I mean, what, the Klan comes by and burns crosses on their porches or something? Forces out black residents from historically black neighborhoods in not only New York City, but also throughout other cities in the U.S. is similar to slavery. Boy, everything is slavery, you know? Now, this let me quote from the mayor, from his honor himself. When I was in Ghana last year, I saw how families were displaced, torn apart, and brought over to America. I guess you saw with his very own eyes. Through slavery in the hulls of those ships, living in dungeons, spending months and months living in their human waste, having their babies taken from them, saw them dispersed and displaced, he said in an address, Juneteenth in Central Park. There is no difference here, he added. Let's acknowledge the presence of people who are part of the community that they built. He cited Tulsa, Oklahoma, Chicago, Los Angeles, Austin, Atlanta as having undergone massive gentrification. He said, where minority communities are being met with destruction, let's educate our children so that they know that there were folks here who built this city that we call New York. Of course, black people built New York.
It's, you know, it's where Wall Street was built. I mean, come on.
The trouble is they really believe this stuff.
Yes, they do.
They believe this stuff. Now, of course, Juneteenth is just another day like MLK Day for white people to hang their heads and apologize forever and ever and ever. Amen.
Do you have your Juneteenth shirt yet?
I don't. I don't think I ever will. No Juneteenth shirt.
You're going to get red flag for that.
Well, you know, and a lot of people are outright saying, yes, Juneteenth should be America's Independence Day, because that's when America truly lived up to the Declaration of Independence. July 4th, that was a bunch of unimportant old white men getting together.
What is that Frederick Douglass quote about what does the 4th
yes,
of July mean to the
Negro? What does the 4th of July mean to the slave?
To the slave. Okay.
Oh, he's very down on it. He's quite eloquent on the subject. It's a bunch of bombast. He says it's something like, slavery is a savagery that no civilized country should ever tolerate, and that what goes on in America is the worst crime of anywhere in the whole world. He was quite upset and excited about it. But Joe Biden, you know, in his little Juneteenth declaration, he said, great nations don't ignore their most painful moments. They confront them to grow stronger. And that is what this great nation must continue to do. Do you think this is making us grow stronger?
Well, we confront judging by how many shootings there were at Juneteenth celebrations and the fact that there's still a reward out there for a Juneteenth shooting in Charlotte to the tune of just under $50,000.
Well,
I don't think so.
Maybe it's culling the herd. I don't know. Making us stronger.
God.
Now, I believe, Mr. Kersey, you have a story on Congress, and Congress wants to awaken the Fed.
So this is an editorial that was published today, June 22nd, 2022, in the Wall Street Journal. It's written by their editorial board, and I think it's very important. A woke mandate for the Federal Reserve. Biden endorses racial equity as a third central bank priority. I'm going to repeat that. Biden endorses racial equity. I'm sorry, not racial equality, racial equity as a third central bank priority. President Biden recently promised in these pages not to interfere with the Fed. Yet last week, he endorsed a House bill that would add racial equity to the Fed's dual mandate of price stability and full employment. I'm going to say that again. It would add racial equity to the Fed's dual mandate of price stability and full employment. So how does the White House square this contradiction? The House bill passed last week, 215 to 207, with little media notice, but it deserves attention because it reveals how the Biden admin and Democrats plan to politicize monetary policy and financial regulation, basically implement racial socialism.
Well, you know, I did a whole video on this very subject. Remember when he first came in his first day in office,
this is it.
He issued this order to every federal agency saying, okay, what is your equity plan?
It wasn't just to the Fed. You're right. It was to the entire federal government.
I read through some of them. I did not read the Fed's equity plan. I should have done that.
Was that the impetus for when the military stood down with the black Secretary of Defense to have people check their privilege and...
It was probably related, but I don't think it was under orders. That was just what our black Secretary of Defense decided was necessary.
So
continue, please.
Yeah, candidate Biden advocated making reducing racial disparities a third monetary mandate. You have to wonder if one reason the Fed was slow to tighten policy was because the central bankers agreed with him. Several Federal Open Market Committee, FOMC members promoted the goal of inclusive employment even as inflation began to creep up. And indeed, that was a greater mandate than keeping prices down and unemployment low, or getting unemployment lower. Now House Democrats want to codify racial equity as part of the Fed's mandate. This bill would require the Board of Governors and FOMC to, quote, exercise all duties and functions in a manner that fosters the elimination of disparities across racial and ethnic groups with respect to employment, income, wealth, and access to affordable credit, end quote.
Surprised they didn't throw in
mortgages in there as well.
Yes, the
bill directs the Fed to include race in monetary policy, the operation of payment systems, and the supervision of banks and non-banks deemed by the Financial Stability Oversight Council to be systemically important.
Well, this is logical. So, every waking thought of every American should be, how can we help black people?
Yes, how can we disadvantage our economy even more at the mandate of racial equity? That in fact will be the central tenet, as opposed to price stability and
full employment. What's in it for blacks? Every policy must be looked at from that angle. We already have a Congressional Black Caucus that takes that look, but everyone.
Just a few more lines from this very good editorial that I encourage everyone to read. Central bankers have a hard enough time balancing full employment with stable prices. Adding a racial equity mandate could cause their models to go catawampus. Yes, catawampus. They use the word catawampus. That's a word that I've only heard ever uttered from one other person. That's you.
It could be me.
It's you.
Cattywampus.
Cattywampus.
I pronounce it cattywampus, but that's probably a southernism.
Cattywampus.
Cattywampus.
How small would the black-white unemployment gap have to be, and how high would prices have to climb before the Fed considered raising interest rates? The pandemic has been an informal experiment in this triple mandate. It hasn't worked out for minorities. The Fed's accommodative policies have driven up asset prices, mainly benefiting relatively well-to-do people who own homes and stocks. Now, a recession may be in the offing, which would compound the harm inflation has done to minorities, not to mention white people. White people are paying the same amount of gas for blacks for the time being, although I'm sure that's part of Biden's plan to try and get rid of or lower gas prices, just make white people pay a little higher.
Well, but he's not doing it yet.
He
should just eliminate the gas tax for
which
black
is what
people.
He's done. Oh, yeah, that's
come on. Let's be logical.
White privilege has a price.
That's right.
One more great line: requiring the Fed to incorporate race into bank and potentially non-bank supervision would likewise contradict its duty to protect financial stability. Would the Fed reduce the capital that banks must hold against loans to minorities? Would banks be graded based on the number of loans they make to minority businesses?
Probably.
Yeah. Again, this is the whole editorial is worth reading. They end with this. The bill would instead politicize monetary policy and financial regulation when the Fed's focus should be slaying inflation while avoiding a recession. House Democrats who voted for this bill to be called out for House Democrats who voted for the bill deserve to be called out for supporting racial favoritism and undermining Fed independence. As for the POTUS, the progressive agenda is apparently a higher priority than controlling inflation.
Did the Wall Street Journal suddenly discover this?
It's important. This is a very important editorial because it doesn't quite say what this is. It's racial socialism.
And whatever you call it, it's just putting blacks right at the center of the economy, of
monetary policy,
of everything. Yeah, of course. They're the most important humans who ever walked the earth.
Obviously, that's the case.
Yes. Get that through your noggin, Whitey. Now, here's another interesting article, an important article, I think. And it is from the City Journal. I think that is the intellectual home of Heather McDonald, of course, whom we praise repeatedly on this program. And this article was written by Lior Sapir, L-E-O-R. He's a fellow at Manhattan Institute. And he writes about Patricia, the mother of a teenage girl who in recent years has come to identify as transgender. She lives in California. This is Patricia. Considers herself progressive, votes Democrat, and leads a group for parents of children with rapid onset gender dysphoria, ROGD. I didn't realize there was an acronym for it. That is, young people who suddenly experience distress with their bodies and believe that undergoing medical transition to the other sex will make them whole again. This latest form of insanity that's sweeping the country. Patricia's daughters, at first lesbian and then trans identity, emerged in response to feelings of shame about being white. I think this is very significant. This guy's onto something that's important. And I first heard this theory from our star writer, Mr. Hood, Gregory Hood. He's the one who first proposed to me that all of these white people who suddenly think they're in the wrong body or the wrong sex, whatever it is, it's an attempt to become a victim because being white is such an intolerable experience for these people. They've been told over and over that they are inherently oppressors.
So that's the neuroses, okay.
And this guy, Lior Sapir, has tumbled to this. He goes on to write, I have since spoken to more than a dozen ROGD parents, that's rapid onset gender dysphoria, and parent group leaders who tell a similar story. Their schools compulsively tell their children how awful it is to be white, how white people enjoy unearned privilege, how they benefit from systems put in place by and for white people for the sole purpose of oppressing people of color. Plagued by guilt, the children, almost all of them girls, run to the sanctuary of LGBTQ+ identity. Once there, they are catapulted into hero status. According to Patricia, the mother, some teachers at her daughter's school are more forgiving towards queer or trans kids who hand in homework late. The students, especially the girls, absorb this message. They are acutely sensitive to how identity affects their social status and academic fortunes. They want the warmth that comes with queer trans identity, but above all, they don't want to be thought of as vicious oppressors. This is the sickness that affects millions and millions and millions of white people all around the world.
Yes.
And this is at the
root. Tens of millions.
Yes. The political environment made it dangerous for school administrators to seem neutral, even towards radical forms of anti-racist curricula. So this is constantly beaten into the heads of vulnerable teenagers. The institutionalization of critical pedagogy is now a non-negotiable imperative. Being white is not something these teenagers can escape. They can't pull a Rachel Dolezal. But they can mitigate its social costs by declaring themselves part of an oppressed group. I think this guy is really absolutely onto it. Being queer or non-binary, or again, trans, depending on the definition, takes nothing more than an act of will. One need only declare oneself so, and automatically you cease to be an oppressor. This is very important.
You become the oppressed, eternally oppressed.
You become the eternally oppressed, so you can link arms with your black, brown brothers.
Remind me his credentials again.
He's just a fellow at Manhattan Institute. Now, I looked him up, and he's written a lot of articles on all of this craziness about people who think they're the wrong sex. Other than that, I haven't looked into him very carefully.
I mean, obviously, you know, this is something that's just come so fast into academia. I mean, do you remember any of this? When did you first encounter this?
Oh, gosh. I mean, I've never actually come face to face with it. I've just started hearing about it, I don't know, 3, 4, maybe 5 years ago at the most.
But
maybe
the
not even
speed in which this became,
well,
I mean.
See, this, I think, it is part of the results of critical race theory. It's relatively recently, surely, that young white girls are being told that, you know, just by being born, just by breathing the air, just by having a heart that beats, they are inherent oppressors, and they can't stand that idea, these poor tender-hearted things. And so they become queer instead. In any case, another option, this guy is very insightful here. I think he's really onto something. Another option available to girls who wish to escape or at least mitigate their status as oppressors is to have a diagnosed mental health problem, especially ADHD. Multiple personality disorder, gender dysphoria, depression, or anxiety. Patricia said that it is not uncommon for teenage girls in her daughter's community to one-up each other constantly based on who has more or more severe diagnoses. In other words, being a loony makes you a victim also. How can I be an oppressor? I've got ADHD.
I don't have all of my mental faculties.
That's
so
right.
I don't have any moral agency.
I'm not responsible for anything.
Exactly.
Yes, I'm
exactly.
A schizo. Once a child embraces a new LGBTQ+ identity, moreover, her parents will find themselves powerless to stop what can easily become a swift decline in her mental and physical health. Her school, in addition to fueling her desire to escape white cis status, you know, we are cisgender people, you know. Normal people now have to have some sort of fancy weird name to describe them.
Or to differentiate them, because there's always a brand new form of psychosis that's...
We thought we didn't need any kind of special, we're just normal. But no, you are white and cis, not trans. Now, fueling her desire to escape white cis trans, in addition to fueling her desire to escape white cis status, it almost guaranteed to have affirming and inclusive policies at her school, meaning that it will unquestioningly use her preferred name. Call her George from now on, or maybe Rick, and pronouns, and in many cases hide that information from her unsupportive parents. Instructed to view themselves through the distorting lens of white supremacy, teenage girls are seeking refuge in puberty blockers, testosterone injections, and double mastectomies, while their parents are almost powerless to stop it. Now, if being told about race and white privilege produces this, I mean, imagine all the other damage being done to the minds of these people. I mean, this is an extreme example of the terrible damage that you do psychologically.
What's the critical race theory, it's almost as if it's irreparable harm. It's like that great scene in The Searchers with John Wayne when they're trying to find his niece and they find all the victims of the Indians, all the squaws, all the white girls who were taken, and they're all in shock, they're all in terror. And if we were to assume power, I kind of feel like it would be the same thing. You look at these people who have had such mental trauma placed on them by critical race theory that they embrace this nonsense. And if you were put them in a room and trying to rehabilitate them, I think you'd have to do what John Wayne did when he said, they ain't white.
Well,
and he gave them a look. It's like, who are these people? Well, and I mean,
I hope they are not unsalvageable, but probably some of them certainly are.
I'm afraid to say that the majority probably are.
Not a majority. Surely. I mean, what they're being told is so unnatural, so crazy, so against human nature, so against all of our instincts. I'd like to think that if we had control of the media just for 10 minutes, we could straighten them out. But who knows? Now, moving on to Philadelphia. In Philadelphia, 3 female friends were brutally beaten. in an unprovoked attack by a man.
Oh, a man.
A man, yes. It was an attack by a man. Cops say neither. The women didn't know him. He didn't know them. And he just, there's a video of this in Philadelphia. He just knocks them silly. And after that, another black man walks by these white women. One or two are still on the ground. He just walks by. He must have seen the whole thing happen. He just shows up immediately. He just doesn't do a thing. Utterly unconcerned, nonchalant. Well, this same attacker, whose name turns out to be White, Malcolm White, he apparently attacked another woman 20 minutes later that same evening, right in Philadelphia, as well as carrying out two separate assaults against female victims the following day, one of which included a rape. This guy was, and then the next day,
model citizen,
Malcolm White carjacked a woman by tearing her from her car by her hair. A lovely, lovely lad. Now, she managed to call 911. The cops later arrested White in a nearby wooded area. Interestingly enough, this model citizen was released from prison in January after a history of assaulting woman prison guards. Now, crime continues to rise while District Attorney Larry Krasner faces calls to resign on account of his soft-on-crime policies. Overall, violent crime is up 7% compared to the same time last year, which is already up in a most substantial way. House Republicans have initiated the process to impeach Krasner, even if the recall doesn't work. Now, the three women he attacked were white, and he didn't try to rob them or anything. He just beat them up, humiliated them. And I see no mention of the race of the other victims. But I'm sure systemic racism just got to be too much for him. And he just went round the bend. That was all he could do. It was just too much for him.
Was this on Juneteenth?
I don't believe this is on Juneteenth.
Okay.
This is an independent celebration.
Okay.
Yes, his own personal Juneteenth. Liberation. Okay. Now, you had an interesting story on machine learning about the criminal mind.
Yeah, this is from a Steve Saylor blog. It's a paper written by four individuals. Machine learning can predict shooting victimization well enough to help prevent it. Published on June 14th, 2022. Who is likely to get shot is a pretty good proxy also for who is likely to shoot somebody. Using earlier police records on 327,127 Chicagoans, they rank ordered them and how likely they were to get shot over the latest year and a half. Among the top 500 likeliest to be shot, 0.02% of all Chicagoans, 13% were shot in a year and a half, which is 1.9% of all shooting victims in Chicago, and 8.7% of the top 3,381. Coincidentally, 8.7% of all shootings. So, as this is going on, we learn that, on the other hand, one-third of all shooting victims were not known to the police. So that's a rough estimate of the often asked question about how many shootings are purely criminals, thugs shooting thugs, gangbangers shooting gangbangers, et cetera, et cetera. It looks like one-third of the victims are not what the Chicago Police Department would consider criminals. Most of them probably aren't highly respectable, but they aren't the problem. Of the two-thirds with information in CPD files, you could probably use their rank ordering to divide them into a few tiers, from killers to thugs to thieves to working men with problems handling their liquor or drugs. Of the top 3,381 predicted victims, 89% are black males and 10% are Hispanic males.
Right.
Keep in mind that this is machine learning and it's not racial profiling.
My math says that's 99%.
Yes, that's 99% of...
What's the population? What's the city? Is this a
Chicago
city?
Is Chicago. Roughly 33% white. Yes.
It's a third.
It's almost like New York.
It's America's future.
And again, I'll read that again. Of the top 3,381 predicted victims, 89% are black males and 10% are Hispanic males. And as you said, my math's a little off sometimes, but 89%.
I think you're right.
Yeah. Okay.
I think you're right. Mm.
So machine learning, quite interesting.
Machines, but you know, AI is racist. It recognizes the world as it is, and that makes machine learning racist. We have many experts who will set you straight on that score. Now, On the subject of numbers again, here are some more interesting numbers. The Border Patrol nabbed 15 people crossing the southern border in just the last month of May who were on the FBI's terrorist screening database. 15. The number of people on the terrorist watch list crossing the border is a record for any month. We've never had as many as 15 flit across the border, equaling all of 2021 and more than the Border Patrol found 2017 to 2020 combined. So we have what is, relatively speaking, a tsunami of people on the terrorist screening database coming across the border. Now, they were, of course, among the nearly 240,000 total border hoppers that Customs and Border Protection nabbed in May, marking the worst month yet for the Biden administration. And of the, to put it more precisely, 239,406, they have to count them with pretty carefully, of the number nabbed at the southern border, only 42% were booted out under Title 42 pandemic emergency policy. The rest processed under normal immigration rules, which under the Biden administration means being released into the communities to go live next door to you and to await alleged court proceedings. And we know what that means. Now, nearly 12,000 people every day were held by the Customs and Border Patrol. And of that number, more were just released than actually sent back. But on any given day, they got 12,000 people that they got to house and feed and try to medicate. And 12,000 people, that's a lot. Now, in late May, federal prosecutors revealed that they had busted an assassination plot against former President George W. Bush.
I remember this.
Shrub. And they arrested an Iraqi man who they said was planning to sneak an ISIS hit team across the southern border to carry out the killing. This really got very little news.
It got incredibly.
Practically
incredibly
nothing.
Very little news.
Yes. And the man bragged in a conversation recorded by investigators that he'd already helped smuggle two Hezbollah agents into the U.S., and he had paid $50,000 per person. Well, I think, you know, he got overcharged, badly overcharged. You can get him in for a whole lot less than that. I think $5,000 will usually get you across the Rio Grande, won't it? In any case, Mark Morgan, who headed CPB, Customs and Border Patrol, in the Trump administration, said, quite realistically, "I'm concerned that the next terrorist attacker is already in the United States because of this administration's open border policies." How true. Now, if somebody does take a shot at George W., or at anybody else for that matter, is anybody going to apologize? Is Jumpin' Joe going to apologize?
No, he's going to just fall off a bike.
No, he'll just fall off a bike. Yes, that's the best he can do under any circumstances. The Biden administration has resisted revealing the terrorism numbers. A congressman had to demand that those numbers be publicized. But now, the Border Patrol post those numbers, and what they worry about is that among the 139,000 people they let loose in May, were they really able to vet them seriously to see if any of them were on this terrorist watch list? A lot of them use all kind of funny names. They throw their passports away before they get there. So there you go. How many more of them could be terrorists? We will see. Now, moving on to what is an annual hand-wringing story. Out of New York City, every year, it's the same story. It is a problem without a solution, Mr. Kersey, of which so many of our artificially concocted problems are. Did you know that black students...
Oh, I did.
Although a larger share of them sought admission in New York City's specialized high schools than the previous fall, a whole 20% of the people who wanted to get into Stuyvesant and Bronx Science, 20% were black, but they received only 3% of the admission offers.
Just 3%.
And of course, you get an offer only if you pass the test. There's no wiggle room, no gaming the system, no, none of this diversity stuff, no lotteries, no nothing. You got to score high on the test. Latino students also receive disproportionately fewer offers than white or Asian students, making up more than 25% of test participants, but just 5% of offers. So blacks and Hispanics together made 45% of the people who took the test, but only 8% of the class was offered. Now, who knows how many will take them up? It can be no more than 8%. Asian students were 31% of test takers, but more than 52% of the offer.
Oof.
Yep, they're pretty good.
Oof.
White students made up roughly 17%. In other words, more black students, more Hispanic students than white students took the test. Probably because they're being lashed. Take that test, take that test. Now, you got to get those numbers up. So they're encouraging people who have absolutely, they're encouraging all sorts of no-hopers
to take the test. I actually wonder if there's some sort of monetary incentive to try and reach some quota to get black and Hispanic students to take the test.
There could be. That wouldn't surprise me at all. White students were 17% of those seeking entry and 28% of the offers. So there you go. 52% Asian, 28% white. Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. Intense emotion and debate has swirled around the city's 8 specialized high schools for years for the same reason. They are largely made up of white and Asian students. And of course, Mayor Bill de Blasio, he tried to reform the process. But according to this article, he was met with well-funded and well-organized resistance, and his attempt was ultimately abandoned. Interestingly enough, it is the state legislature in Albany that decides how the admission process is supposed to work. I think that's very interesting. Mm-hmm. The city itself doesn't have control over it. Now, after having said that it was well-funded, well-organized, the article goes on to say that Asian families, particularly those coming from poor immigrant backgrounds, have fought to keep the test in place. So there you go. We have to count on Asians to keep this, what's left of our shredded meritocracy in place.
Let's be blunt. It was Asians who recalled Chesa Boudin.
Sure seems that way.
So they're the ones who voted for
it. That's right.
Overwhelmingly.
Right. Yep. Yep. So. God bless them. Now, again, we have another crisis, not just in addition to the admissions to Bronx Science and Stuyvesant, but in citizen science volunteers. It's a crisis.
So this is on a website called The Conversation, Academic Rigor, Journalistic Flair. And the headline is, it's published today, by the way, Citizen science volunteers are almost entirely white. And you automatically know that's a bad thing. Significant figures at the very top, they have a nice little green graph. And it says this, 95%. That is the share of citizen scientists who identify as white, according to a study of volunteers prior to 2020.
Oh, no.
There's a huge crisis. No. Oh. This has to be reversed.
Oh, gosh, yes.
Everyday volunteers around the world contribute to scientific studies through citizen science. It can be anything from counting migrating birds to measuring precipitation or even tracking outbreaks of COVID-19. Citizen science helps researchers collect more data than they could working on their own. The people who participate in these projects also benefit by gaining knowledge about the fields they're working in and learning skills. So the people who wrote this, they're 2 researchers who study biology, the environment, and the role of science, citizen science in these fields. In a newspaper published on June 22nd, 2022 in Bioscience, we used survey data from 2016 to 2019. To better understand the demographics of citizen scientists. A few small studies have found that citizen science volunteers tend to be white, well-educated, and have high incomes. But this homogeneity of participants is common knowledge among researchers, and few collect detailed demographic data on participants in citizen science. In our survey, we collected data about race, income, and other demographic information. Overall, we received 3,894 responses. Most of the responses, 3,191, came from the 2016 Christmas Bird Count, the world's longest-running bird-related citizen science project. This sounds like great stuff that people are just doing spontaneously to try and increase knowledge. That's what science is, right?
Crowdsourcing scientific knowledge.
Since 1900, thousands of people in the U.S. and abroad have counted birds around Christmas and reported the results to the I'm going to mispronounce this word. Audubon Society? Audubon Society. Okay. I've never actually encountered that. So we also collected data from 280 contributors to Candid Critters, a project that uses trail cameras to study wild animals. I think that's something you'd like to do. Maybe. I've heard. And from 423 members of SciStarter.org, an online inventory of science, of citizen science projects. So, their findings. 95% of respondents identify as white.
Oh, my God.
The lack of racial diversity was striking for each example, with 96%, with 96% of participants in both the Christmas bird count and candid critters identifying as white.
Well, I guess it's candid camera. Critters on candid camera.
While only 14% of the U.S. population has a graduate or professional degree, almost half of our survey respondents held these degrees. Additionally, while only 6% of U.S. population has careers in science, tech, engineering, or math, half of our survey respondents from all three data sources worked in STEM fields.
Oh, my gosh. No, it's awful. Well, so citizen, these are citizen science volunteers.
And here's the kicker.
Okay.
Problems from a lack of diversity. Additionally, if one of the goals of citizen science is to boost science literacy and trust in science, it can't achieve that goal if it's preaching to the choir by only reaching people who already work in science.
Then let's get people who don't believe in science.
Yeah, and then finally,
who don't believe in birds to go look at birds.
And then here we go. A lack of diversity in citizen science could even compromise the quality of the research. For instance, one study found that volunteer water monitors, who were mostly well-educated and white, undersampled areas where environmental concerns disproportionately affected poor communities of color. Well, it sounds like these poor communities of color need some citizen scientists. They need to get some volunteers. But as we've learned about volunteering, seems to be aggressively white.
Well,
and in
Mr. Kersey,
diversification.
Mr. Kersey, I bet citizen twerking needs diversification. I bet citizen rapping and citizen shooting needs diversification. Come on. All those things are just not by any means sufficiently diverse. Well, Texas Republicans, they get frisky lot these days. They are pushing for a referendum to decide whether the state should secede from the United States of America. The demand for Texans to be allowed to vote on this issue in 2023 was one of many measures adopted in Texas GOP's party platform following last week's state convention in Houston.
Interesting.
Yes, they want to have the opportunity to vote for secession. It decided that also that federally mandated legislation that infringes upon the 10th Amendment rights of Texas should be ignored, opposed, refused, and nullified.
I'd like to see more states
I would love to see that.
Yeah.
I mean, that covers a lot.
Yes, it does.
That covers a lot. Now, the U.S. Constitution makes no provision for states to secede. In 1869, Supreme Court ruled in Texas v. White that states cannot unilaterally secede. But I'd like to see Texas try anyway. The Texas Nationalist Movement has a website claiming that 500,000 Texans support its work. And also the GOP platform, as I say, these guys are feeling frisky, described homosexuality as an abnormal lifestyle choice and also declared that the party opposes all efforts to validate transgender identity.
That's so important right now to start putting your foot down on that.
Yes, yes. It also demanded that the state legislature pass a law prohibiting the teaching of sex education, sexual health, or sexual choice or identity in any public school, in any grade whatsoever.
See, that goes so much further than what they were trying to do
in Florida.
In Florida, yeah. It was only, what, to third grade?
Yes. They said you could start it only in fourth grade.
Yeah, no,
so
guys,
they want it gone.
Yeah.
Yes, none of that. Mommy and daddy will teach you this stuff. Yes, the birds and the bees start at home. Now, of course, this is something that happened a couple of weeks ago. We never got around to talking about it. As you know, Mr. Kersey, and probably many of our well-informed listeners, monkeypox will be renamed following calls for a non-discriminatory and non-stigmatizing term. I guess the monkey liberation rights movement really put in a strong call for this to think that was it. WHO promised a new name for the rash-causing virus endemic to Africa, and it would be announced as soon as possible. Well, it hasn't been announced yet. Naming viruses geographically goes against WHO guidelines because of concerns it may spark abusive backlash or potential racism. But monkey is not a geographic region. Mr. Kersey, how can calling it monkeypox be insulting or racist if it's not a region?
I don't know.
How can that be?
I mean,
it's a mystery to me. What's wrong with monkeypox?
Monkey is a noun, right? So it's
a noun, yes. Now, as far as regions being something that's insulting, what about Spanish flu and West Nile virus? Rocky Mountain spotted fever. And Guinea worm is from Guinea. Did you know that Lyme disease got its name from Lyme, Connecticut? For an important
I did. We actually talked about this back during the early days of the China virus.
That's right. And then Ebola, that's from a river in Zaire. Then there's Middle East respiratory syndrome, MERS, and Marburg virus disease, named for Marburg, Germany. And norovirus, this is a new one on me, named for Norwalk, Ohio. Zika fever is named for the Zika forest in Uganda. The Ugandans don't seem to be beefing. And then there's German measles. Gosh, if I were a German, boy, would I be up in arms. And not to mention Legionnaire's disease. Remember Legionnaire's disease?
I do.
So nobody's changed its name. Well, as far as who is concerned, as well as renaming the actual pathogen, strains will be lettered. They will call them A or B to remove any mention of the parts of Africa where they were first spotted. In other words, now it talks about the West African version, the Central African version, the Congo Basin version, but now they'll get names like MPXV1, MPXV2, clear as mud. Monkeypox was first discovered when an outbreak occurred in monkeys kept for research in 1958. That's how it's got its name. However, Mr. Kersey, most cases are believed to be transmitted to humans, not by monkeys, but by rodents. Now, tell me this. If it were called rat pox, would it be necessary to rename it? What do you think?
No.
No?
I don't think so.
You don't think so?
I don't think
that so. That would not be racist?
No, it would not be racist.
But monkeypox somehow is. That's racist against monkeys.
I've got a couple ideas of why it might be, but yeah.
But you know, I've got a theory. You know, there is something called cowpox. If there were a disease called sheeppox, I think you'd have to rename that because anything referring to a disease of sheep is insulting to white people.
Anyway. Well, especially the City Journal people we talked about, people who need to find, they have to find an identity that is oppressed, even if it is made up.
In queerness. Yeah. All right. Now, speak to me of CRT at West Point.
Oh, God.
This is very sad.
West Point Cadets, well, again, we talked a couple weeks ago about how they're going to potentially take the Robert E. Lee portrait down. He was, I believe, he was the headmaster at West Point at one point?
Yeah, he was the commandant.
He was the commandant, yeah.
Yes, he was.
West Point Cadets schooled on whiteness, queer theory, under newly revealed CRT regime. West Point Cadets have been taught that whiteness connotes race privilege and structural advantage as part of instructions based on CRT, according to newly revealed documents and course materials from the Military Academy. Among the trove of documents, which are handed over to Judicial Watch after a public records lawsuit, presentation slides instructed candidates that, quote, in order to understand racial inequality and slavery, it is first necessary to address whiteness. Whiteness, the slide reads, is at a standpoint or place from which white people look at themselves and the rest of society. It refers to a, quote, set of cultural practices that are usually unmarked and unnamed, end quote. Another slide contains a graphic that reads, quote, modern day slavery in the USA, end quote, instructing students on their disparities between blacks and whites. The presentation
That's modern slavery.
Yep. The presentation points out that blacks are less likely to have a college education, receive recommended medical screening tests, receive bank approval for a housing mortgage, own their own homes, or receive a job promotion, or be a citizen scientist.
And that's because...
No, it doesn't say that.
And that's because Massa won't let them be
citizen
scientists,
exactly.
Right? It's slavery.
The Department of Defense turned over more than 600 pages of documents, including presentation slides, course outlines, and emails exposing the extent of CRT instruction at West Point. Military's under attack from within, said the fantastic president of Judicial Watch, Tom Fitton. He said this, quote, these documents show racist, anti-American CRT propaganda is being used to try and radicalize our future generation of Army leadership at West Point, end quote. No, actually, it's just trying to indoctrinate people into the prevailing zeitgeist of the ruling elite.
To find
the future leaders who will carry out these commands against those white people who dare resist this stuff.
I wish, instead of saying anti-American.
Anti-white. It's anti-white.
Tell us what it is.
Do you know one of the few people who actually has said that?
Who's that?
Tulsi Gabbard.
Oh, that's right.
She's one of the few people who just came out and flat out said, anti-white. Yes. She actually says a lot of great things.
She sure does. She sure
she
does.
She's better than 99.9% of Republicans.
I agree. Tulsi for president. Well, now I'm moving on to Toronto. Police forces across Ontario province were mandated in 2019 to start collecting data on the race of people against whom officers used physical force or drew their weapons. This came after a Human Rights Commission found that blacks, who represent 8.8% of the city's population of 6 million, were more likely than whites to be shot by Toronto police officers. Now, newly released data found that blacks were 2.2 times more likely to have interactions with officers and 1.6 times more likely to have force used against them. These are surprisingly small multiples, it seems to me. Only twice as likely to have interaction with officers? I'm astonished by this. And only 1.6 times more likely to have force used against them? They must have very, very gentle, law-abiding, agreeable black people in Toronto. Well, the Toronto police chief apologized for his officers' excessive use of force. Chief James Raymer said the policing data are difficult and uncomfortable and confirms what for many decades racialized communities, particularly black and indigenous communities have been telling us that they are disproportionately over-policed. This is the chief of police talking. He said the force has been grappling with the complexities of systemic racism and recognize that run-ins with authorities can have a profound impact on a person's life. Well, yeah, it can send you to jail. And erode trust in policing. We will do all we can to fix this mess, he said. And again, blacks were only twice as likely as whites to have an interaction with the police. Astonishing.
That is.
Yeah, yeah. And he's already crawling on his belly, licking boots, eating crow. Of course, I mean, he's just a white man after all. What do you expect him to say? Blacks have more interaction with police because they commit more crime, damn it. Wouldn't that be refreshing? No, he's white. You can't expect that.
One of these days, someone in power is going to say that.
Someday.
You know, we keep saying that, but, you know, again, there's a lot
of... It will happen.
Yeah.
It will happen. Now, at this press release in which he was groveling, activist Beverly Bain of the No Pride in Policing Coalition responded directly to the chief. She said to his face, "We do not accept your apology." And she renewed calls to defund the police. Well, there you go. Things are bad in Toronto. Meanwhile, a Toronto Star article. I thought this was pretty good. Here's the headline. Kind of terrifying, colon. Not terrifying, kind of terrifying. Numbers show racist great replacement conspiracy theory has found audience in Canada.
In Canada,
kind of terrifying.
It's happening very fast there.
It sure is. Now, I don't have the numbers at my fingertips. I wish I did. But research conducted by Abacus Data asked 1,500 Canadians about their stance on conspiracy theories that have become popular during the pandemic. It found nearly 40% said they believe in the Great Replacement Theory. Timothy Caulfield of the University of Alberta, he's a professor there, points to a climate in which communities of believers, did you know you're a community of believer if you think the Great Replacement is happening? They've become more entrenched online. I've been studying this for a long time. You see these numbers, the degree to which people are completely disconnected from reality. It kind of almost breaks your heart, he said. They're disconnected from reality. They don't think whites. They think whites are being replaced. Can you imagine that? I wonder how many of those awful, bigoted, ignorant, absolutely out-of-touch Canadians think race is a biological fact. And I wonder how many of those utterly out-of-touch, bigoted Canadians think racial differences in IQ exist. Almost breaks your heart, doesn't it?
Well, it's like we were just talking about with Texas. I wish every state would let people vote. It doesn't matter. It'd be non-binding.
Yeah.
Should we be able to secede? It would be fascinating to know what would happen in a lot of states. I think when people are asked, and it would be fun to know.
Time is running out. So I think we have time enough for a little story from El Salvador. One of those, add sauce to the stew of the United States of America. Claudia Eliza Hernandez, age 25, was worried that her 3-year-old daughter was possessed. Because you would often wake up in the middle of the night crying or screaming. Hernandez, the girl's church leader, and her grandfather and her uncle drove her to a church for an exorcism. The three held the toddler down by her neck, torso, and legs for several hours. They stuck fingers and hands down her throat in an attempt to make her vomit out whatever it was possessing her. The girl died after this 12-hour-long exorcism, during which she suffered multiple injuries around her eyes, face, neck, and chest. The prosecution urged the judge to deny Hernandez bail, and her family waited 2 hours before calling 911, with the mother freely admitting to police that nobody performed any kind of medical assistance. They were trying to squeeze her body to bring the demons out. She was considered a flight risk because she has deep connections to El Salvador. She was born there and was thought that she might make a break for it. This is a horrible, horrible story. But the question remains, what in heaven's name was she doing here? That it's just part of this glorious, diverse tapestry of many peoples that we're trying to build in the United States, right?
Well, it's about I'm sure she's upset she wasn't able to celebrate our real Independence Day, and that's Juneteenth, since she's in jail.
Yes, I suspect so. But in any case, we will close our program today by once again inviting our listeners to give us your thoughts. Point things out to us, especially let us know if we have made an error of some kind. We confess we sometimes make errors. And there are two ways to reach us. You can reach Mr. Kersey directly at
Because We Live Here at protonmail.com. Once again, that's all one word, Because We Live Here at protonmail.com. And of course, there's another great way, and that is by going to
amren.com. AMREN.com. We have a Contact Us page. And if you reach us there, you can send us a message. Also, AMREN.com is worth visiting for other reasons besides that. We have articles. We have podcasts like this. We have videos. Mr. Kersey has actually written occasionally for us. We're lucky to get stuff from him.
Is it too early to bring up the conference?
Well, maybe it's not too early to bring up the conference. The conference, we expect to be advertising it, if we're lucky, sometime this week. And yes, you will be able to register if everything goes according to plan. And it will be November 18th through 20th at the beautiful and magnificent Montgomery Bell State Park in Tennessee, which is where we've been meeting ever since, gosh, 2010, I believe. I can't remember. I'm not very good at dates. But the last few conferences have been there.
I think it's 2012.
Was it 2012? Yeah. You're so much better about this chronology.
Is there any name you can mention and tease, or are you waiting to unveil that all at once?
I will let fly with two of the confirmed names. One is Congressman Steve King, and another is a congressional candidate, Laura Loomer, who by the time the conference is held, we hope will be Congresswoman-elect. Besides that, your servant, the editor of American Renaissance, will be speaking. And Sam Dixon is, as always, our closer. And we have quite a few other very exciting speakers up our sleeves.
We'll leave it at that. So, quite the tease.
Yes, quite the tease. Quite the tease. All the clothes all come off eventually. But for now, we will tease. And once again, we thank you so much, so much for your attention. It is really an honor and a pleasure to spend this time with you, and we look forward to doing the same next week.